Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'll be your host for this coming hour. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. We got two really great interviews in this coming hour. We'll be hearing in-depth about the Healthy Living Center in Ames, a proposal that will be coming to the citizens of Ames as a bond issue for a referendum in September, and we'll get a detailed description of exactly what the plan is. Also, very interesting interview with Wynn Cowger, who was a former Iowa State student who wrote a published paper on anthropogenic litter. What is anthropogenic litter, you ask? Well, stick around. You'll find out. We don't have much time today to talk about the wild ones. Just suffice it to say that even though I gave the groundhog her space this year and let her have the garden, now she and her babies are sitting on our porch steps and they're trying to eat the parsley in my herb box. Enough said about the groundhog. Here's Mr. Dennis Hart with the roundup of last week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. It's all yours, Dennis.
Thanks very much, and hello, everyone. Let's start our rundown with a quick look back at a story that made news last Friday. Word that attorney Josh Opperman had announced he'd like to be considered for the vacant seat on the Story County Board of Supervisors. Opperman had previously run for the board last year and lost by about 800 votes to Supervisor Rick Sanders. Now, Sanders has left the board, and a committee composed of the Story County Auditor, the Recorder, and the Treasurer plan to meet this week to talk about the finalist pool. A new supervisor will be sworn in at next Tuesday's Board of Supervisors meeting. Saturday's trip brought word that one of the two remaining suspects being sought in connection with a home invasion, assault, and robbery in Kelly had been taken into custody in Des Moines. 20-year-old Manuel Balderas was booked into the Polk County Jail, then transferred to the Story County Jail. Another suspect had been arrested in Texas last month. Authorities were still looking for the third suspect. They are all suspected of taking part in an assault against an 82-year-old woman. Also last Saturday, a report on the visit of Democratic presidential hopeful John Hickenlooper, who showed up in Boone on Friday. He said he plans to use pragmatism, not socialism, to defeat President Trump. He identified three main issues: climate change, health care, and the issue of automation and artificial intelligence and its impact on workers. There was more last Saturday, including a story about the new mural that had been painted at the North Grand Mall in Ames. The mural was added to a previously blank wall outside the mall's North Grand Cinema. Kip Davis of Ames helped lay out the design and painted the wall. The design showcases Ames' history and attractions. And there was word last Saturday that a Florida native who moved to Iowa and who says he loves the state had opened a new business in Nevada. It's called USA Customs and Fashion. It's on 6th Street in Nevada, and it features a variety of clothing, jewelry, and more. Owner Terry Scott said he's also looking into possibly bringing a nail salon business back to the store, which had previously been occupied by a business known as VT Nails. Politics dominated the news last Sunday, with a report on the Democratic Party's Big Tent on the Prairie fundraising event at a local brewing company that drew three presidential hopefuls. One of them, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, who told the crowd he wants to make America work for working people again. He said, in his words, Americans are the hardest working people in the world, and added that they aren't getting their fair share. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was also there. She said President Trump is dividing the country on every socioeconomic, religious, and racial line. She also vowed to end gun violence and take on the National Rifle Association, and she added that she will push for elections that are publicly funded. And New Jersey Senator Cory Booker also appeared. He said that defeating President Trump next year should be, in his words, the floor, not the ceiling, for Democratic candidates. He said the election is not a referendum on one man or one office, but, in his words, a referendum on who we are and what we mean to each other. In addition to the story about the Democratic fundraising event last Sunday, there was also a story about a 19-year-old Boone woman who will not only be voting in her first presidential election this year, she's taking a major role in Cory Booker's campaign. Her name is Landra Reese, and she is now the youngest member of the Iowa Democratic Party's State Central Committee. Sunday also brought a report about the two-day statewide League of Women Voters convention that had taken place in Ames. That gathering celebrated 100 years of women's suffrage, and it culminated Saturday with a series of guest speakers. And there was one more story of note last Sunday. Word that the Story County Committee that will choose the person to fill the vacant seat on the Board of Supervisors planned to narrow the list of candidates to a pool of three or four names on Monday. Seven people had thrown their hats into the ring to replace Rick Sanders, who recently left his seat on the board. The vacancy committee planned to make a final decision yesterday, Thursday, so that a new supervisor could be sworn into office next week. On Tuesday came word that the Story County Committee chose five candidates to be finalists for the vacant supervisor's seat. Those five were Latifah Faisal, Lisa Heddens, Lynn Lathrop, Josh Opperman, and Patrick Sheets. The five were all scheduled to make presentations to the committee yesterday, Thursday, afternoon. After the committee made its decision, the new supervisor would be sworn into office next Tuesday. The candidates were all trying to fill the seat left open by the resignation of Rick Sanders, who stepped down last month to become the new president of the Iowa State University Research Park. Tuesday also brought word that the number of cats recently rescued from a rural Madrid home was continuing to climb. The Animal Rescue League of Iowa reported that it had rescued 176 living cats from the property and found about 200 dead ones since rescue efforts started June 4th. More cats had been spotted on motion-activated trail cameras placed inside the house and outbuildings. 65-year-old Dennis Carlson was charged with animal neglect and failure to dispose of dead animals. He is scheduled to show up in court July 5th. Meanwhile, the rescued cats were receiving treatment and were being prepared for eventual adoption. Also Tuesday, word that Ames police were still investigating an accident that took place Saturday morning at Lincoln Way and Howard Avenue. Two people were injured in the crash, which involved a Jeep Liberty and a motorcycle. Both of the injured were on board the motorcycle. Authorities said the SUV was stopped at the intersection of Lincoln Way and State Avenue when the SUV's driver made a right turn at the red light onto Lincoln Way and started traveling east. The motorcycle was eastbound on Lincoln Way and collided with the driver's side part of the SUV. The motorcycle went off the road and onto a nearby sidewalk at Howard Avenue and Lincoln Way. Wednesday brought word that an Ames man was in custody after police said he tore down the pride banner displayed at the United Methodist Church of Christ near downtown Ames and set that flag on fire. 30-year-old Adolfo Martinez was charged with criminal neglect and disorderly conduct. Authorities said Martinez had been kicked out of a bar, returned, told a bar employee he was going to burn the place down, then left and returned with the church's pride flag. Authorities said he set it on fire on 5th Street. Police said Martinez admitted ripping the flag from the church at 6th Street and Kellogg Avenue, then burning it. The church's pastor sent an email to the congregation on Tuesday saying plans were in the works to replace the banner. Also Wednesday, a report on the informational meeting held Monday evening about the proposed Healthy Life Center in Ames. About 30 community members showed up at the Edwards Elementary School to hear plans for the proposed center, which would be built on 10 acres of land owned by Iowa State University on Ontario Road. The project is estimated to cost about $49 million, with contributions coming from six entities, along with about $5 million in private donations and $29 million coming from a bond issue that is scheduled to go before voters on September 10th. The Healthy Life Center would include a lap pool, a lazy river for water walking, water slides, a wellness pool, a gymnasium, indoor and outdoor playgrounds, an atrium space, a participation kitchen, an outdoor community garden, and more. The center could be opened by the spring of 2023. Two more informational meetings about the Healthy Life Center were set for this week, and two more will take place next week. The first one next week will be at 6 p.m. Monday at Meeker Elementary School. The second will take place Thursday at noon at Ames High. There was more Wednesday, including a report about Tuesday's Story County Board of Supervisors meeting. The supervisors agreed to accept applications to replace Deb Shildroth, who is leaving her county job as Director of External Operations and County Services in order to become Ames Assistant City Manager. The supervisors will accept applications until July 15th. The board also decided to take a closer look at an urban renewal project application from the city of Collins after some discussion about whether that city's application followed all the rules. Thursday, yesterday, brought word that the Ames City Council had delayed voting to approve construction of the proposed Miracle League Field and Inclusive Playground in Inez Grove Park until next week to ensure that all funding from the Ames Foundation is in place. The council did unanimously approve a plan that lowers the park's cost estimate to $2 million, contingent on a guarantee of the complete funding from the foundation. The cost-cutting measures included a reduction of concrete and the elimination of Miracle League Field lighting. But foundation officials said they're confident they'll be able to restore all that after their fundraising efforts are complete. Meanwhile, the council also delayed a vote on an ordinance that would have required short-term rentals to operate as vacation lodging properties. Short-term rentals are classified as ones with a 31-day stay or less. The discussion about them is a response to the state legislature's decision to prohibit municipal enforcement of rental cap ordinances. Also yesterday, a report on a candidate for the 4th Ward seat on the Ames City Council. Joe Van Erdwick is a SkyRide transit worker. He's running for the seat now held by Chris Nelson in the district bordered by Ontario Street, North Dakota, and North Highland Avenues. He's an Iowa State University graduate and says he wants to bridge the barriers between ISU students and permanent Ames residents. The election will take place November 5th. And one more note from yesterday, word that Cornbread Barbecue has opened its doors on Main Street in Ames. The restaurant is in the old train depot building, and its opening comes after a decade of planning. Now that the restaurant has opened, the Cornbread Barbecue food truck has been temporarily retired until the restaurant operations are running as smoothly as possible. And there you have it, your smooth as possible summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, taking the weekend off now, but planning to return to this very seat on Monday, when I'll take a look at what made news all around Iowa. In the meantime, whatever you do, I hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy weekend.
This is Local Talk. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in, and thank you, Mr. Dennis Hart, for a rundown of the local news from the past week from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Since 2016, the Healthy Life Center collaboration partner team here in Ames has been meeting to develop plans for what is being called the Healthy Life Center. This is a project you probably have already heard about. And currently, a series of public meetings is being held to further explain and to answer questions in anticipation of a referendum that is coming up in September to vote on a bond issue to help pay for the Healthy Life Center. Here are three members of the planning team: Nancy Carroll, who is Executive Director of Heartland Senior Services, Keith Abraham, Ames Parks and Recreation Director, and Susan Guiazda, Ames Public Relations Officer. They're here to explain a little bit more in depth exactly what this proposal is, and we start the discussion with Keith Abraham letting you know about the referendum that's coming up on September 10th.
Just recently, City Council voted to go ahead with a bond referendum vote on September 10th for the Healthy Life Center. The bond vote would be for $29 million, in addition to $20 million that either the partners in the group or through local fundraising.
And that will be a municipal referendum for the people in Ames to vote on whether they want to go ahead with using tax dollars to pay for part of the center.
Yes.
Right now, do you have actually a literal plan of how it would look and where it would be, what would happen there?
We do have a conceptual drawing for the facility, and it's going to be located on Shoal and Ontario Road. There'll be a gymnasium. There's a space for Heartland Senior Services. There's a space for Mary Greeley Medical Center for their therapy program. There's a aquatic center. All those things are identified, but until the bond is passed, at that time, then we would go into final design and move forward for construction. We've spent the last 3 years really having a lot of discussion and talking to individuals in regards to what should be in the Healthy Life Center. So I think the components are pretty well set. It's just where they would be is what the final design would decide.
Why Shoal Road and Ontario Road?
The size of the building with parking and amenities, we needed about a 10-acre site, and it's very difficult to find a 10-acre site. So one of our partners, Iowa State University, they have this property that they were willing to lease to the city in a long-term contract for this facility.
Break down what the financial cost is. The $29 million is what taxpayers would contribute towards it.
Correct.
And
correct.
How much is the total again?
$49 million, or project cost.
If this referendum passes and this center is built, how much would this cost a resident of Ames per year?
Based on assessed value of $100,000, residential property owner would pay $44 annually. Commercial or industrial property owner would pay $70 annually.
So a resident of Ames who has property, for every $100,000 that their property is worth, $44 towards the Healthy Life Center.
Yep, per year.
All right, thank you. So, and what exactly does that money pay for? It's not paying for the land. There's some rent.
So this would be a 20-year bond for $29 million. And that includes the debt payback on those bonds for the paying the $29 million to build it. And it also includes there's roughly about a $400,000 deficit annually to operate it because the revenues don't equal the expenses. So that's also included in that $44 or $70 for business and industry. The important thing for people to understand, though, on that $400,000 deficit is that $300,000 is being set aside in what we're calling a building depreciation fund. So that means $300,000 is going into a savings account so that in 10 years, when the building needs new windows, a new roof, whatever, the city's already going to have the money parked to go and get it and not have to come back to the residents a second time to say, oh, now we need X amount to maintain the building. No, the city's being very proactive, and hats off to the city for doing this because it really does protect the resident long term. So all of that's included, and let's just do residential, in that $44 annually per 100,000 assessed valuation. And the reason we do the 100,000 assessed valuation, it's easy to do the math to Keith's point. If you have a 200,000 property value, 300,000, whatever, it's quick to do the math.
Okay, that $29 million essentially allows the city in the form of bonds to find the capital to build the center, to keep running it, and also to set aside money for future improvements and future needs.
Exactly. Well said. The thing that cannot get lost, though, in all the conversation is that, again, it's a $49 million project. Collaboration partners and private fundraising are bringing $20 million to the project to lower it to that $29 million. It's just unprecedented.
Money that's coming from partners, are there individuals involved and organizations?
The private fundraising went out to individuals. Bev and Warren Madden and Ann Campbell put together a team of about another 6-8 people, and for about 11 months, they went out and they raised $5.5 million. So there's naming opportunities, and there were some anonymous donors. It's just a variety, but $5.5 million. In addition, then, Heartland, Mary Greeley, they're going to be tenants within the building, so we have to bring our own cash to the project. And so when you put those now together of the collaboration partners and the private fundraising, that's how we're coming up with being able to lower the capital from $49 million to a bond issue of only $29 million, because we're bringing $20 million to the project collectively.
The partners in this project are Heartland Senior Services, Mary Greeley Medical Center, Story County Government, and the City of Ames. And then Iowa State University is, in a sense, cooperating with you by offering you land so that you don't have to buy land?
Well, probably the more dramatic aspect of both Iowa State being involved and the Des Moines Area Community College is once it gets open, the practicum and internships of giving students real world experiences, because they will be working in tandem with, let's just use in the participation kitchen, students that are majoring in food science, they will come in and offer some of those classes of how to cook and eat healthier. DMAC has one of the best culinary arts programs in the United States. And so they will be coming in from DMAC students and teaching gourmet cooking. So the student experience is what we're really, really excited about that DMAC and Iowa State bring to this programmatically once it's opened. The Dean of the College of Human Sciences, Laura Jolly, has been on our team. So Laura Jolly represents, of course, kinesiology, exercise science, food science and nutrition, all of those departments that all, when you look at the life sciences, that's what this Healthy Life Center is trying to bring to life programmatically. So the students are just, again, I think going to be a key to the practicum, but then also the research opportunities could be limitless. So Iowa State is going to be just a key partner.
Let's talk a little bit about the concepts behind this, since we're already kind of on the topic. Can you talk a little bit more about what the goals are of the center in terms of conceptually what a healthy life center is?
Well, I think one of the things that that we've talked about over the last 3 years is the whole idea of live well, be well. And there's three components of that: physical activity, health and nutrition, and then social connections. We developed that early on, and through all of our subsequent conversations, we've really looked at what needs to be in this facility to make that happen. Also, we talk about intergenerational facility. We're going to have older active adults in this facility that have a lot of experience and are willing to give back to the community. We're going to have a lot of youth in this facility. Intergenerational interaction is going to be really helpful. We're going to have an indoor playground. So get kids to come in when they're young. Have those families come in. Learn to maybe grow fruits and vegetables out in the garden and then bring those in and learn how to use them and cook healthy. We're going to have a walking track, a jogging track. We're going to have gymnasiums that will have courts that will be used for a lot of different activities: pickleball, badminton, volleyball, basketball, and who knows what else is going to be in there. So in the aquatic center, we have three pools, a 6-lane, 25-yard lap pool. We'll have a zero-depth entry pool with a play structure, a lazy river. We're going to have a wellness/therapy pool. But then all part of it is the social connections. There's going to be meeting rooms. There's going to be a healthy cafe. There's going to be an atrium where people can sit. But one of the things, too, is what's really unique is the walking, jogging track kind of goes through the whole facility. So at one point, if you're on the walking track, you'll actually walk over the atrium and it'll be open to below. You'll walk past the aquatics area and be able to see in. You'll be able to walk around the gym and see what activities. So it's really, when you're up there, hey, I come here to walk, but wow, I didn't know they had that activity, or I didn't know they were doing that. Hey, that looks like fun. Oh, hey, I know so-and-so down there. I should ask them what they're doing. So it's really bringing people in, giving them those things. How do you live well, be well, so people can have a very good life?
From a user perspective, I would say that the way that we live today, we have a lot of issues with sedentary lifestyles, with childhood obesity. And if you think about the climate that we live in, we live in a beautiful state that gets very, very cold. And there are a lot of barriers often to making that healthy choice. My children are older now, but when they were smaller, to find activities that we could do as a family in the winter, it was very, very difficult. Can you imagine a facility where you could go to, take your children, I could take my mother, we could go for a walk, we could have a cup of coffee, the kids could play. The idea of all these generations working together and addressing this really important health crisis that we're experiencing right now in the United States, chronic conditions often brought on by these sedentary lifestyles. This is a win-win-win for everybody.
Who put this concept all together?
Well, it all started back in February of 2016 when we all started knowing just through conversation that everyone had some sort of a need. So we just started talking the synergy. The city of Ames, we knew, wanted an indoor warm water recreational pool. And the Heartlands needed a new facility for probably 30 years. Baby boomers don't want this isolated senior center anymore. The pool part of this capital footprint is probably $19 million. So that's before the residents of Ames, when municipal gets demolished anyway. So why would you build that separate and then have an isolated senior center when most seniors, what they want is access to a warm water pool? So in the conversations early on, Mary Greeley Medical Center was saying, you know, we've got this small and antiquated therapy pool. How about if we bring Mary Greeley capital funds and put them in the same walls as the city talking about doing this warm water recreational pool? So you can just feel it. Everyone started to say, we have an independent need, but we can accomplish a lot more if we all think bigger under the same roof. Then we added, of course, in the components of what Keith went over, of the physical activities, but also the health and nutrition and social networking. And that's where Iowa State and DMAC get involved. And when we have learned, most rec centers in America have left out the kitchen part. And what we have learned from research at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester is you need physical activity and you need to learn how to cook healthier to be well. And so that's why we're very, very unique in America in saying we have to have a participation kitchen where people come together, learn how to cook, have fun, make friends, and want to keep coming back into that situation too.
So this is really a collaborative conversation that developed between many aspects of different agencies who discovered a mutual need.
That's right.
Was there a trigger for this conversation? How did it start?
Leadership on all of these fronts. So the spark was, we've all known each other. We talk and we communicate, and we always have this desire to collaborate in Ames. The City of Ames funds part of Heartland's budget as an asset agency, so we run into each other professionally a lot. Mary Greeley and Heartland have a relationship. Mary Greeley prepares our home-delivered meals. Mm-hmm. We coordinate the volunteers to deliver all of them. So there was that conversation there that around meals, but you also start just talking bigger. We all had needs, but it was this idea of what can we accomplish together that we could never do independently.
Susan, you are the public relations officer for the City of Ames. How do you see this affecting the way people see Ames?
We see this as a quality of life issue. What do we offer people who are considering coming to Ames, and what do we offer our current residents? What do they expect? A facility like this is really very progressive. It shows that we're forward-thinking. People moving here are expecting to be able to access amenities like this. We are looking at a workforce shortage, and we're looking at aging workforce as well. So how do we bring all those needs together and address them with one project? I think this does a really, really wonderful job.
I know that Mayo has a Healthy Life Center up in Rochester. Was that a model that you used?
There are several places around the country that maybe two entities have come together. We haven't found one that has put six partners together to really do everything that Nancy's been talking about.
It's one of a kind because six partners that all bring a certain area of expertise and professionalism and knowledge all are under the same roof. We really are excited about it's that health and nutrition piece with the physical, with Iowa State and DMAC, is how come we're going to hit a grand slam when it opens.
Can you guys really pull this off? Are you confident?
Well, it's the residents of Ames that now will answer that question.
Well, if they provide the money, can you pull this off?
Oh, you betcha. Yep.
Let's talk about where somebody listening to this can find out more. You do have information online, and I know that there's a series of programs that you're offering to the public. Would you tell us a little bit about where to find more information? Susan.
So whenever you need more information about the Healthy Life Center, we'll have the most up-to-date information online. That's at the city website at cityofames.org/healthylifecenter. But additionally, we want people to be able to come and interact and ask questions. So we have public meetings scheduled throughout various times this summer. The next ones will be Monday, June 17th, Thursday, June 20th, and Tuesday, July 9th. You can get specific information on those on our website. They're at different locations, so they're convenient for people and during different times of the day. I can just give them to you right now. Monday, June 17th, 6 p.m. at Meeker School. Thursday, June 20th, noon at Ames High School. And Tuesday, July 9th, 9 a.m. at the City of Ames Auditorium. I anticipate we'll add more to that as demand requires. So check our website, cityofames.org/healthylifecenter.
What concerns have you heard about the center there? People might have reservations about it.
I think money is always an issue. Anytime you're going to go and ask people to vote for something that's going to raise their taxes, that's always a concern, always a question. And that's why we really hope people attend these public meetings, multiple sessions, multiple locations, to answer that question. Here's what you get for your investment. Another one has been the location. People have said, oh, why does it have to be out in West Ames versus downtown Ames, or maybe in the existing open space at the Furman Aquatic Center? If you think about 10 acres of land, you need to visualize four bandshell parks stacked together. It's a huge footprint. And if you were going to try to come downtown Ames and do that, you would have to take out massive blocks of downtown Ames. The Furman Aquatic Center site is very interesting. The Furman Aquatic Center is built in the flood fringe. The balance of the site now does not accommodate another 10 acres. It's floodway. And the DNR state of Iowa restricts any construction in floodway. But I think those are the two main ones, money and location, and how much it will cost to use. It's generally proportionate to what it costs if you would buy a seasonal summer swim pass at Furman.
So people will have membership to the center to use it?
Passes. Keith is going to offer a lot of options for, again, you can do it from an electronic fund transfer and different things.
And Keith, will this be managed by the Department of Parks and Recreation, the center?
Yes, the facility is going to be owned and managed by the City of Ames. The department responsible will be Parks and Recreation.
Have you heard any other objections from the commercial sector?
Yeah, one concern that has been expressed, and we really understand and appreciate it, is it unfair for government to construct this kind of a capital improvement using public resources that it does take away potentially from their user base and their ability to generate revenue for a viable business? And we understand that. But what we would also suggest are the concepts are different. It's not a competition. It's a complement. The concept of the Healthy Life Center mirrors what a YMCA is trying to accomplish when you turn no one away. And you're going after the socioeconomic status of the fiber of your community. So our mantra from day one is that the Healthy Life Center is to help all ages and all socioeconomic status live well, be well. No one will be turned away. The other thing that we would suggest is the private sector does not have an indoor mini Furman Aquatic Center. They don't have an indoor participation kitchen. Those two pieces are what we believe are a differentiation between the Healthy Life Center and the private sector. But we, again, hope that it just buoys everybody up and gives everyone more opportunity to participate, whatever their specific interest level is. But those two are very different. And we're not trying to go after the student population for the Healthy Life Center. We're going after the long-term permanent residents of Ames from zero to 90.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Yeah, Ursula, as we've said throughout this, the concept and the project is very worthwhile. There's a lot of needs in the community that we've addressed earlier. And we really just encourage all residents to come to one of these sessions that we're going to be offering. Go to the website, find out more information, ask us, call us, you know, if you have questions, but really come out and really understand what it is so you can make an informed decision when it comes to September 10th for that bond referendum vote.
Welcome back to Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Mary Rankin has joined us, Sustainability Director for Iowa State University and the City of Ames. Welcome back, Mary.
Hello. It's great to be back, as always.
It's good to have you. Today, we're going to talk trash.
We are going to talk trash. This month is National Rivers Month. And a very interesting study was recently done by a former Iowa State student. He has just published that study along with a couple of other co-authors. It most definitely involves water quality. And also, it does have a connection to trash and our consideration of what we do with our waste at the end of its life. And I thought it would be really interesting to talk to him about his work. And he's actually joining us from the West Coast. So, Wynn Cowger, hello. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's National Rivers Month, and you've been involved in some really interesting research related to the health and well-being of our waterways.
Yeah, it's new research on stream trash. I am a really kooky person when it comes to trash. I really enjoy picking up trash. I like digging through piles of trash. It's definitely my obsession, and I'm actually doing a whole PhD on trash right now.
Not only are you a former Iowa State student, but you focused on Iowa waterways in your research. We are all very aware that trash does find its way into our waterways. How did you get interested in spending a lot of time researching this?
I was on a cleanup one day, and I started getting really curious about where this trash was coming from and where it might go if I hadn't picked it up and what hazards it might cause in the environment. And ever since then, I've just kept following that curiosity, and it's led me down a whole bunch of really interesting roads and hopefully to some useful discoveries.
You recently got a paper published about some specific research you did on stream trash. So tell our listeners what the focus of your research was and what you hope to find out.
I worked with Project Aware, the largest river cleanup in Iowa. It happens every year next month, actually. And we used some data from that project on the amount of trash that was being cleaned up in the rivers. And we wanted to figure out where the most amount of trash was in the river, where the trash might be coming from, and what sort of management policy decisions might work to address this problem?
You looked at all different types of trash?
Yes. Really, the most interesting findings that I think we found were from looking at the total amount of all trash.
It would be helpful to back up for our listeners. Project WARE is a statewide river cleanup initiative, and WARE actually stands for a Watershed Awareness River Expedition. It's going to be celebrating its 17th year, and it started as an initiative with the Department of Natural Resources. It's gotten so large that it definitely can stand on its own, and since has become its own self-standing 501c3. A different Iowa waterway is chosen every year that can be navigable by canoe, and so volunteers sign up in order to literally start at one point in the waterway and float over the course of 5 days, picking up any sort of trash, and it is then brought to a landing point, a different one each day. The trash then is sorted out into different categories.
Hundreds of volunteers are out there on the water for 5 to 7 days, canoeing up to 100 miles over that time period. And so I want to really champion a huge effort of these volunteers who go out there and do this really hard work. This research could not have been done without them.
It's not easy work, yet it's such important work, yeah. To the point where tons and tons and tons of material are pulled out of these different waterways that are highlighted each year. So it really is very significant and obviously important to what you were looking at. You really looked at all trash that was collected through this event.
In your paper, you use the term anthropogenic litter.
Oh, very good point, Ursula.
What is anthropogenic litter? What does that mean?
As trash is starting to become something that's studied with academic rigor, now we need to have a word for it that's not just trash. It's a very charged word. So anthropogenic is human-sourced, and litter is debris that's thrown out into the environment. So anthropogenic litter, human-sourced debris.
So the stuff they left up on the moon after the moon landing is anthropogenic litter.
Oh, it could be. Yeah, that might be my next research paper. Thank you. Yes, definitely. Something that I think about all the time with anthropogenic litter is what is trash and what is treasure. I think that anthropogenic litter is really just materials that have lost their purpose.
Just a distinction to make as well when you're talking about human-sourced debris. Human-sourced from the standpoint of, in its original intention, these materials were utilized by humans?
In most cases, I think it's litter that was made by humans, such as plastic. There's no analog in the environment for plastic or some of these really hard metals. But there is one case where we would include, like, if somebody had a bunch of yard waste, and they dumped that into a river, I would include that into the anthropogenic litter category because it's human sourced. A human brought that physically there, mm-hmm. and dumped it there.
Through cultivation.
Right. And I think that's an important point, too. I mean, something to, you know, for these river cleanups and the different stream cleanups that we do, even at a community level, there's the difference between trash purposely being put there, and then trash coming through natural disasters. You know, they've tornadoes and those sorts of things. Humans didn't necessarily put them there, but it was the human element that had the items that were created to begin with. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk outcomes. What did you learn from this research? What were your big takeaways?
Exactly what you were just saying about the different sources of trash, either trash being dumped in the river or trash flowing in from upstream. So we really studied that to try to figure out which of those sources might be the most dominant. And what we found was that neither of the sources seemed to be most dominant. Really, both sources seemed to be important for different types of trash. So really heavy types of trash seem to be really associated with sources that were nearby the stream, and then much lighter types of trash and smaller trash was more associated with humans upstream from that location.
Sure.
And so what we think is that the total upstream area can move those smaller and lighter items more easily. And this is when something is dumped there, it tends to stick around for a while. Mm-hmm. So we think that's the reason why we're seeing both. That means that in Iowa, there needs to be management strategies that address both of those sources. Another thing that we found, and this is a number to share, we found that over 1 million pounds of trash in Iowa streams, and that's a really conservative number. That's just the large streams. The streams that we studied were only 10% of the total length of streams within Iowa. So we think that there's probably much more trash in total Iowa streams.
And what were the most common forms of trash that you found?
So the most common in terms of mass was definitely metal. We don't actually know in terms of count or volume because we didn't collect that information. But metal is definitely up there, and so are car tires.
Okay, so you were going by weight. Correct?
Yeah.
So
sure.
mass means weight and count means how many of each?
Yeah, exactly.
When we look at landfilling, we're considering tipping by weight and those sorts of things. So that's sort of been an overarching standard that we've utilized. But now, as we have added plastic in so many different forms into our lives, there certainly isn't much mass to that, but incredible volume.
Yeah, definitely. The bulk density of plastic is about 10% of the bulk density of other materials, and so there's about 10 times more volume in the same amount of mass of plastic as there is in same amount of mass of metal, for example.
So did you see a lot of plastic?
Definitely, there is a lot of plastic. Everything is made up of plastic these days, it seems. Even the tires that we collected are synthetic polymers that some would say that they would put them into a plastic category. We found a lot of large fabric pieces, and then a lot of, like, just loose little pieces of plastic here and there.
And when you say the majority of it was metal, what form is the metal in? What creates metal trash?
Iowa has a really interesting history with metal. Metal was used to control stream bank erosion for a while, so they would actually put whole cars on a stream bank to stop it from eroding. The same thing happened in fields when there's a gully forming, so a really eroded channel starts to form and starts to cut out a bunch of the sediment of an area. You can throw your used appliances into that and try to stop it from eroding too quickly. So, there's a lot of stuff like that. There are car parts. There are old tractor parts. Yeah.
And the car tires, are they there because of the cars or people just throwing tires into the river?
So we definitely found these treasure troves of tires where it's pretty obvious that somebody has been dumping these tires in one location. You'll find these little hot spots where there's just hundreds of tires and you yell at all the volunteers, "Hey, come on over here, like we got a treasure trove of tires. Let's load everybody up with tires right now." Those are the hot spots. We'll see them in these big piles right along the stream bank. It's more rare to find just one sole tire by itself.
Tires can't be landfilled, so we can no longer put them in
right.
our trash. So there is a cost. You go get new tires
right.
at your dealership and, you know, I don't know, you pay $1, $2 fee for them to dispose of them. But I think
yes.
for some folks, it has been a, no, I'm not going to pay that fee and
right.
I'll just dispose of them, quote unquote, on my own. But then they end up in some of these areas.
Right. I'm pretty confident that that is a problem that Iowa should address. So one thing that we found was that recyclables, especially those that could be redeemed, we didn't find very many of those in the environment, even though everyone's using these all the time. You know, people are going through 100 cans a year or something like that. But we are finding a bunch of these car tires. So I think really one of the solutions for the car tires could be that we provide a redemption fee instead of a penalty for turning it in. So when you buy your car tire, you would pay an extra $5, and then you get that $5 back when you return your car tire. That might be one solution that we could look at, and it's definitely evident in what we found in Iowa streams that redemption fees in Iowa do work.
And speaking of car tires, did I understand correctly from the study that there's a correlation between proximity to roads and garbage in the river?
Yeah, roads seem to be one of the biggest sources, and we think that that could be because the stream is very accessible. Like if somebody had a car full of tires, for example, or of scrap metal, it would be really easy for them to drive up to that location and dump them into the stream there instead of another area where the roads might be really far away from the stream and you'd have to hike in to get it to the stream.
We want areas to be accessible recreationally speaking, but then there's this whole other layer of accessibility that's sort of an unintended consequence perhaps when we're looking at planning.
With the access locations, if we did find that there was a strong relationship between access points and the amount of trash that we're seeing in these streams, we could solve that by having a dumpster or something near these access points where people could have a second chance before they decide to dump their trash.
Right.
Maybe, I might as well just throw it there instead, you know?
Right. Yeah.
We're speaking with Wynn Cowger. The paper we're discussing is called Anthropogenic Litter Cleanups in Iowa. Riparian Areas Reveal the Importance of Near Stream and Watershed Scale Land Use.
Yeah, awesome.
Congratulations on getting that published, Wynn. I know it is no small feat, so that is very exciting.
Where was it published?
Journal of Environmental Pollution. And I'm going to put this paper up on ResearchGate so that people can access it as well.
Okay.
I'll put
that up right after
this call.
Okay. And what findings are unique to your studies? What were you able to do with this study that other studies have not been able to do?
Everyone has found the relationship between near stream land use and trash. So basically everyone has found that if you're in a very urban area, you find more trash. But no one has been able to figure out the relationship to all of the upstream area. And with this data set, we were able to do that because this data set covered so much ground. Project Aware, every time they're collecting data, they're covering like 100 miles of stream. And with that, we're able to detect all of the upstream effects well. So we were able to detect that the area upstream was really important source of trash, specifically for the smallest and lightest weight types of trash. And then nearby the stream, we found that it was also an important source of trash, but more so for the heavier types of trash, like metal and tires.
Wynn, give us a little bit of background about your educational journey, just a second.
I got my Associate of Arts at Hawkeye Community College, and then I went to Iowa State University, where I studied environmental science. And I have been very passionate about the trash problem, even since my days at Iowa State, where I did a study on trash in streams in India, and then I found out about this great program called Project Aware, and I started to research their data as well, and now I'm in a PhD program at the University of California, Riverside, where I'm studying plastic pollution, very specifically, the one component of the trash problem.
Maybe if you just want to give a comment to the impact and the importance of some planning and organizing related to volunteer cleanup efforts and getting communities engaged in these cleanup efforts.
I think that cleanups are a gateway drug into the rest of the environmental movement. I think that when people go out on a cleanup, they see what we've done to the environment, they're picking it up, they're smelling it, they're feeling it, they're really connected. And I think once you get that experience, you're much more likely to start to care about all the other things that we're doing to the environment as well. Trash is a really interesting pollutant because most pollutants are really small molecules that you can't see yet. You could go up to a stream and say this is really polluted, and you wouldn't see that pollution. But with trash, it's undeniable. Definitely this Snickers bar did not come from anywhere besides a human, and I can see that it's a problem, and I don't want to hear it. I'm picking it up. I think that that's the importance of cleanups, reconnecting people to wilderness. That's something I love about cleanups, is that I feel like I am unearthing the wilderness from beneath the trash. While I pick up the trash, I'm re-scaping the landscape to bring it back to its wild form.
Even if we are going out for a limited amount of time, the incredible impact that we can have toward our future.
Do you foresee a day when people no longer see water as a medium for getting rid of trash?
I really hope so. Yes, definitely. I mean, I've been to lots of different streams around the world and looked at the trash problems there. And I do think that Iowa is doing a lot better than some other areas where they don't have waste collection, for example. And I hope that we can get the rest of the way to seeing no trash in streams. I want to work myself out of a job. That's my goal.
Yeah.
Sure. Wynn, any last words of wisdom that you would like our listeners to sort of have as parting comments?
I think the main thing I want to say is thank you to all of the volunteers who made this possible. When we get together and we go out in the environment and try to solve some of the environmental problems that are out there, and we collect really useful, high-quality information about those problems, we can turn that full circle using science to address management and policy questions so that we can end the pollution, so that we don't have to go out there anymore and clean it up.
When you were collecting this data, did you have forms that the volunteers had to fill out, or how did you actually gather all this data?
The Iowa DNR took care of all of that. They would get a truckload of trash, and they would take it to the dump, and then they would use the dump scales to weigh the amount of trash, and they would record that. And then they would also record where they did the river cleanup and when they did it.
So the
how many volunteers were there?
So the Department of Natural Resources gave you the data after the trash was collected to use? The data to use, not the trash.
Yes. And I worked with them for 2 years, so I was able to collect some of that data as well with them and work with them on that.
Okay. Well, thank you. Will you come back and tell us about your plastic study?
Yes, definitely. I would love to. Thank you.
Wynn, thank you so much again, and all the very best to you, and thank you for all that you do toward ensuring that sustainable future for all the generations that follow us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wynn.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Wynn had mentioned all of his work with Project Aware. The annual Project Aware event is coming up in July. This year's event is July 7th through the 12th. I know that they are signing up registrations right now. This year's event will be very close by for our listeners. They're going to be doing the Boone River this year. More information can be found on iowaprojectaware.org. iowaprojectaware.org. This Saturday, June 15th, we'll be doing our annual College Creek cleanup. College Creek is the little waterway that runs through campus and into campus town and then into our arboretum, but collects a lot of trash. And last year, we had a lot of plastics, but from a mass standpoint, we pulled out 700 pounds of trash from this little waterway. So we would love folks to come and join us. The event is taking place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and you can come for as long as is available in your schedule. We really appreciate that, and more information can be found at livegreen.iastate.edu. You can just show up at the event. We're meeting at the Forker Building parking lot. It's on Iowa State's campus, basically at the crosshairs between Beach and Osborne Drive. You'll see us set up. We'll have all the supplies there. We're providing trash grabbers, gloves, bags, bug repellent, and sunscreen. So we'll provide all that to you. We just ask that people wear closed-toed shoes and be excited about helping us clean up. You don't have to be in the creek if you don't want to. You can pick up along the stream bed as well. But we'll be meeting in that parking lot. We will have folks there from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. so you can come and go anytime that it works for your schedule.
Okay. Thank you, Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for Iowa State University and the City of Ames. Thank you, and see you next month.
Sounds great, Ursula. Take care. Always a pleasure. And we hope that folks can take advantage of either one of these events or just going out with a bag and doing what you can in your own community. Every little bit makes a difference.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. During the show, we heard from Wynne Cowger, environmental scientist, and members of the Ames Healthy Living Center team, Nancy Carroll, Executive Director of Heartland Senior Services, Keith Abraham, Ames Parks and Recreation Director, and Susan Guiazda, Ames Public Relations Officer. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Fridays here at 89.1 FM. And also remember that we are streaming live at khoifm.org. You can also find a recording of this show later today, along with links to guests and information you heard during the programming. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Belle of Kate Shelley. And remember, as always, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by the 2019-2020 Performing Arts Series at Stevens Auditorium. For information on ticket packages and upcoming performances, go to center.iastate.edu.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Northminster Presbyterian Church, presenting the 2019 Vacation Bible School, Marketplace 29 AD, an opportunity for experiential learning. Children from preschool to sixth grade are invited to visit and interact with a recreated marketplace from biblical times, June 16th to the 20th, from 6 o'clock to 8 p.m. Information and registration forms are found at www.amesnpc.org.